Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Ivamy.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of superhero television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about the newest release in the Sony Spider-Villaverse.
I don't know if you just made that up or if that's the real name.
I forget what the real name
is.
Isn't
it like the Sony Extended Universe with spiders or something?
It's the Spider Extended Universe presented by Sony? I don't know.
There's been no spiders yet.
Presented by Spider-Man with executive producer Sony. It is some movies. It is the cornucopia that Sony has to offer. It is a melange of villains.
Marvel villains?
No, because it legally doesn't have. It's Sony. It's just Sony.
I know, but they only own the Spider-Man villains. That's all they have.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think they can't have Spider-Man because he's in the MCU. So it's just because it's Madam Web. It's Morbius. It's.
I think they have another one coming up too.
Venom, obviously.
Right. Skibbity dip dip. Venom. Yeah.
Madam Web is
that.
The one they've just cast.
Yeah, it's just Sony's Spider-Man universe
is that what it's called?
Sony's Spider-Man universe.
No Spider-Man whatsoever.
No Spider-Man in it. But it's based on Spider-Man villains, so it's Sony's Spider-Man's universe, not featuring Spider-Man.
Wow. I think they should not call it that very often, so I'm glad they didn't know what that was.
Yeah, it seems to just be like a colloquial thing, and I don't know if Sony officially calls it that. I don't know if Sony in a press briefing has ever said the Sony Spider-Man universe. You know what I mean?
I don't know if Sony has press briefings.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing over there.
Does Sony know they made this?
They're just out there scamping around. They don't know. They're living in the year 2000. They don't even know what's what.
All of their movies are based around the year 2000. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree with that. Living in the past, Sony.
We'll talk about that, I think, quite extensively on today's episode of the podcast. So we're talking about the new release of Morbius. It is a new release, and whenever we do have a new release, we do a spoiler-free review. So we are going to give you a quick spoiler-free review in case you are on the fence about seeing it or want a quick taste of the episode before you do. Then, once you hear the theme music to the episode, that's when we are going to get into the spoiler-filled section. So to start with a simple spoiler-free review, Diana, did you like it?
Andrew, no.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like it. It's bad. It's like, it's not so much boring bad. It's just not good. It's just not a good movie. It might have been fine in like 2005. It might have really fit in with kind of the Fantastic Four Daredevil era of 2005. It's just really like nothing. It's definitely a movie where things just happen. Like, you know, like nothing is motivated. No one's relationships matter. It's just like, and we're moving on to the next scene. And it's going to be just like the previous scene. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad this movie's an hour 45. Yeah, it's not that funny. It's not that dramatic. The action is bad. The story is like nothing. It makes sense. It's just nothing. Matt Smith was incredible. Matt Smith, the only redeeming factor of this movie. Thank God you were here, Matt Smith. Dear God, we needed you so bad. And the rest of this movie sucks. So that's my spoiler-free take on Morbius. Andrew, did you like Morbius?
I couldn't agree with you more on all of that. It is
excellent.
It is
consensus.
It is benign, I think, is the best way I would describe this.
A tumor that won't kill you.
It is you know, a superhero movie, if it's not, you know, sometimes you can go, like, deeper and more intellectual and have something to say, but sometimes it's just meant to be, like, a fun popcorn, just a delight. This movie is, like, asking someone for, like a soda. Like, you want a pop, you want something, like, a fun drink. And they're like, well, we only have carbonated water, and actually it's flat. And you're like, well, that's just water, and that's fine, I guess. But there is literally nothing fun and no characteristics about it. This movie is being offered water when you asked for any kind of a soda or carbonated beverage.
I can get behind that.
It's just, there's nothing, I mean, there's things like, I actually don't even know if I'll say there's things wrong. There are things that did not elevate to good and were barely wrong enough to be wrong. All movies are a series of scenes. This movie is a series of scenes. I couldn't agree with you more. A thing happens, and then a thing happens. It is the way that when like a child tries to tell you a story about what happened at school that day mm-hmm. when like an 8-year-old is like, and then this person did this thing and then someone else was over there and then they came over. It is the way a kind of child tells a story. And it's just, it's simple, it's innocent, but it does nothing. But I agree with you. Matt Smith is having a blast of a time. I think Matt Smith went to the Tom Hardy school of like, oh, it's a Sony early 2000s superhero movie. Well, let's just chew the scenery and have fun doing it.
Yeah, people like when we camp it up in these things. Okay, this is what we're doing. I'm freaking Doctor Who over here. We're going to have fun. Matt Smith saved any semblance of enjoyment out of this movie. Yeah. Easily.
He's having hands down the most fun here. And it's relatively benign. It's relatively inoffensive. There's one female character who gets no development, and that is offensive, but they never really like cross into like a dark, heavily sexist aspect other than the like just kind of blatant inherent sexism of having one token female character that is just there for romantic motivation for a lead and has no characteristics, personality, or interests of any kind.
Yeah, I was very unoffended by that because no characters have interests or personality of any kind. Like, she wasn't as any poor written than any other character.
That is true, but there are at least multiple men.
Yeah. There are multiple men.
So there is that. I would say that, like, yeah, this is a perfect example of what the Sony movies are, which is, for better or worse, these are early 2000s superhero movies. Venom is the for better. This is the for worse. Mm. But somehow both of those movies were meant to come out in the year 2002, and they got time warped into the future. They don't belong in these years, but these are both 2002 superhero movies. Like, this Sony Spider-Man universe mm-hmm. should shift, and like Sony should just make it the Sony 2000s superhero movie universe, where instead of basing it around Spider-Man villains, they're like, Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider is back. Wesley Snipes as Blade is here. We have Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. We have Chris Evans as the Human Torch. Because those are where that's the universe this movie exists in.
I feel like I agree, but I also think, like, you can't get those characters because those are Marvel's characters now. Mm. What I think they need to do is just say, these movies are set in 2002.
Yeah.
Because cell phones and stuff don't really play any part in these films. Like, there's nothing modern about them. Like, if you just change the IMDb to, like, this came out in 2003, I'd be like, wow, for 2003, this was a great film. Yeah. The best film of 2003.
I love this idea that we wait for enough time to pass that people forget what year this actually came out.
And we just change the copyright date.
Change it, and then, like, our children and, like, like the next generation, if they're like, let's dip back and see previous generation superhero movies, this will make perfect sense in the timeline of shifting it to the year 2002.
Yeah, and they're all different universes. It could be 2002 here.
Yes. Yeah, that's where this belongs. So yeah, for better or worse, it's a superhero movie from the year 2002, and it's for the worse, with the exception of Matt Smith.
Mm-hmm. And can it be spoiled?
I don't think so, because it's not connected to anything.
No, it's not enough happens there that you care about or is connected to anything to be spoiled, only in the way that, like, any movie's ending can be spoiled in that movie's end.
Yeah, yeah. This is a movie where we are introduced to three characters who continue to exist throughout the film and are in many scenes, and that is it. That is the entirety of it, to the point that I would say in the trailer, almost similar to Marvel fashion, they've made up scenes for the trailer that are not in the movie.
Make up scenes for the trailer.
The trailer has more imaginary, non-existent spoilers than the movie actually has. The made-up scenes for the trailers, they were like, what if we went somewhere with this? So that's how I think non-spoilery this movie is that there is less substance in the film, literally, than there is in the trailers.
Is it a spoiler to say the trailers have lies? Deep questions.
I don't know. That's like an anti-spoiler themselves. I don't. That's five shadowing. I don't even know what kind
we're
of four-dimensional chess.
But we're gonna let you know. The trailers have lies.
The trailers have lies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would say you can't spoil this movie.
No, you can't spoil it.
All right. So that's our quick spoiler-free review. Before we get into the spoiler-filled section, we want to take a moment on today's episode to thank our wonderful sponsor. We want to thank our friends over at Babbel.
Oh, at Babbel makes it so much easier to learn a language. I took French in high school and university, and guess what? I retained literally none of that. Twice I took French.
I went to French immersion and then took German in university. I got none of it. School has let us down, so Babbel is really picking up the slack where we were disappointed in a few different ways.
Yeah, and it has taught me that I actually am capable of learning a language.
Yes.
School just was not the way to do it, because Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language apps use AI for their lessons plans, but Babbel's were created by 100 language experts, so real people figured out how to best learn a language.
Yeah, they figured out a scientifically proven method to be effective, and they got many different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, and it's just nice to have a nice interface that is walking me through and guiding me through this in a way that I remember tried to learn German in university, and you go to the language lab and it's like, here's a cassette tape that asks you questions, answer it back, and I remember recording it on my answers on another cassette tape that I handed into a TA who's overworked and does not care, and nothing happened of that. But with this, it is very helpful because they have speech recognition technology that helps you improve your pronunciation and accent. So that is way better than me just abandoning the things that I say onto a cassette tape in the year 2000.
And pronunciation and accent is so important, because we were down south and our Spanish isn't great. And a few times we'd look up a word and just say it, and they still wouldn't know what we were saying.
Yeah.
Even though we were this is the word, but we don't know how to pronounce it.
You need the pronunciation.
You need it.
Absolutely. And there's so many ways to learn with Babbel, including the lessons. They also have access to podcasts, games, videos, stories, even live classes. So there are different ways, depending on what you find most educational, that you can interact with them, and it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee.
Gotta love that. So you should start your new language learning journey today with Babbel.
So right now, you can save up to 60% off your subscription when you go to babbel.com/TFS. That's BABBEL.com/TFS for up to 60% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life.
Thank you, Babbel, for all your lessons.
Thank you very much. And now let's get into the episode. Let's talk about all of the spoilers and everything about Morbius. We have seen Morbius, and we both liked Matt Smith, and we were both very neutral on the rest of it.
Yeah, it's not offensively bad. I feel like I'm almost kind of glad we just saw The King's Man, which was so, down to my soul, hated it, to be like, oh, this is finally bad.
The King's Man was like, we're over 2 hours, we're sexist, we're homophobic, we hate you for watching this.
And this movie is an hour 45, and the pacing's a little, too fast and chopped up, and the camera's a little shaky, but I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
Each scene makes sense and doesn't offend me in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a bat.
Sometimes there were bats.
And sometimes Matt Smith was having fun.
Yeah, and this is, sometimes Matt Smith is having fun, and it is very much a early 2000s kind of popcorn superhero movie where they're like, these idiots will see anything. We don't need to have heart or characters or charm. It just needs to exist, will see it.
It's got the Marvel logo at the beginning,
yep.
So they're going to show up, and they're going to stay till the credits are done. And that's all there is to it.
And that's how they treated this film, and it could have gone way worse. It was entirely fine.
It was entirely, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm still never going to, watch it again or
oh,
whatever.
Oh, God, no.
But I'm
God, no.
I do praise Matt Smith to no end.
Yes.
I can't stop talking about how good he was. I don't even know if he was, over the top good or just so good compared to everyone else in this movie?
I think he was over the top good.
Over the top good?
I think he understood the assignment. I think he did a little bit of camp with a little bit of heart. And I think he saw in the script how quick the transition went from heart to camp of his character, because the movie moves at a quick pace, but also doesn't have a lot of good dialogue writing. So we have Matt Smith's character, who has the same disease or biological
affectation. Some kind of genetic disorder, they said.
I don't know if it's a made-up thing or based on reality. I forget what it actually was, but they have the same biological affectation of their blood. And Matt Smith, I think, reading the script was like, okay, one minute I'm his best friend, and then the next minute I'm the oogity boogity man who's eating New York. So I need to go from heart to camp at lightning speed, and I'm going to have fun with how fast I do that transition. I don't want it to be jarring. I want it to be goofy, and it's the exact right way.
Yeah, he didn't fall into, like, I need to understand this character's motivation, and maybe he had a hidden darkness in him the whole time. He was just kind of like, now he was a human, and now he's a monster.
Yeah.
He's just, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, human man good, vampire boy not good. Done.
Classic tale.
Done, we're doing it.
I'm a vampire now, and I'm dramatic. Morbius, you need to accept yourself and become more dramatic, says Matt Smith. And I agree with him. I'm not going to lie. Morbius needs to lean into being a vampire a bit more.
I would honestly say the way Matt Smith played this turn is almost like knowing in hindsight that Sony is lost. Because the turn his villain plays, it very much reminded me of Spider-Man 3, and it reminded me of Tobey Maguire becoming the evil guy, and no one quite knew what to make of it, and Tobey didn't know how to play it, and it's almost like Matt Smith was reading this to be like, okay, I'm at home, I'm sad, now I'm evil and extra powerful, and I'm hitting on women at bars around the city before I have a fight with my best friend in an abandoned skyscraper. Oh, it's Spider-Man 3? Well, knowing that, I can replay and get this right in a way that is self-aware and a goof and has fun with it.
That's a good point. Yeah, Spider-Man 3.2.
Yeah, because he's literally dancing alone to himself while putting on a cool new suit.
But it actually was, like, fun and, like, worked. And he also, you know, he's a better dancer than Toby, I guess. Toby was not crushing it dance-wise.
Also true.
At no point did I see his jowl kind of just shake a little.
Yeah.
In mid dance scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Matt Smith had so much fun. I can't say enough good things. I think he made all the right choices to the point where I'm like, I can't believe they killed him at the end, because I knew they were going to do some kind of
spoiler,
sinister...
But yeah, we're in the spoiler section.
I knew they were going to do some kind of sinister six thing. I assumed it was going to be Venom and not Vulture, which was wild, but...
We'll break that down more a little later.
We will, but to the point where I'm like, I can't believe you killed him, because he's so much better than Morbius.
Yes.
Like, if Milo was the Sinister Six vampire, I'd be like, great, can't wait for him to meet Venom. Oh my God, what a movie that would be.
I think it's just because Sony's like, we just need to turn this out. People will see it. Who cares? Mm-hmm. That if this movie was given some love and attention, that is something they should have done a rewrite of, like, on the fly. Like, it is the level of, like, Oscar Isaac as Poe Dameron in The Force Awakens, who's like, all right, I'm here to film my death scene. And producers had to, like, producers, I imagine, swarming on set, dropping out of helicopters, being like, no, you can't kill this precious bean. The people fucking love him. The test groups are eating him up. Do not murder this bean.
The producers jumped into the X-Wing and pulled him out alive, and they were like, no.
No, you can't. So
this man's the franchise now.
They needed whoever in the moment realized that about Oscar Isaac needed to be working on this film and be like, we need to save Matt Smith immediately. Start the rewrites.
Yeah, the fact that it cuts to, I shouldn't think this is a negative. The fact that it cuts to the love interest who was nothing, Martine, waking up alive and not Matt Smith being like, I'm actually alive because I'm so fun. Like, ridiculous. Ridiculous. The money was with Matt Smith.
Always. The money was always with Matt Smith and never with Jared Leto.
Never with Jared Leto. What a what a boring performance from a man who is so over the top in real life.
Yeah.
Like, from a man who is just so dramatic and, like, so method, and he's like, I have a cult, and I send people condoms in the mail, and I'm like, you suck, and also this sucked. You didn't do anything. You played a fucking vampire, and you were like, I'm gonna do it like a Vulcan with no emotions.
That might be one of the most fascinating conundrums about Jared Leto, is that he is an idiot and a dick, but he's at least interesting. Like, it's like watching a hurricane. You're like, wow, a lot's happening with you. Mm. And he brings none of that to the screen in any scenario ever. He is a wild, horrible, idiot lunatic, and in no way does he make any of his performances interesting with that information.
He doesn't. It doesn't bother me too much, just because I don't like Jared Leto, so I don't mind not praising his acting.
That's true.
I don't understand why he keeps getting these big-ass roles. Like, no one liked him as the Joker, and then Sony was like, oh, that's our lead vampire boy. Where does that make any sense? What is the through line there? Did you think all of his cult members were going to come? They didn't even know COVID happened.
Maybe they've infiltrated Sony. Maybe they've infiltrated COVID. The people at Sony. You know, who knows how deep the rabbit hole goes.
How high it goes.
Yeah, it could get deep. But yeah, just a real just airy fart of a performance. Just nothing happening in any way.
No, like Matt Smith's carrying the like brother relationship of the two. Him and I apologize to this actress, my IMDb closed. His character was nothing. Martine, Adria Arjano. Mm. Yeah, this no chemistry, nothing for either character in this relationship.
Yeah. And there was nothing on paper, but nothing was elevated off of the page by Jared Leto's existence.
The only compliment I can give Jared Leto is I Googled how old he was. He's 50 years old. That he looks awesome.
That is surprising and quite disappointing, you know, because you don't want dickheads to age well. Like whenever you see like a meme online where it's like Paul Rudd and Mitch McConnell are the same age. Look how much better you age when you're just a good person. And it's like, that makes me feel good. And then you find out Jared Leto's 50 and you're like, fuck, it's all chaos, huh?
Oh, so
shit.
If you're rich, you can just look nice forever?
Shit.
Damn it.
Shit.
God damn it. I wanted it to be your soul keeping you young looking if you're nice.
I wanted it to be the clip from Mac and Me that makes you young somehow. Maybe that was Rudd's secret.
If you watch the clip from Mac and Me enough, time reverses on your body.
He's made some kind of a deal with the devil that every time he gets that on Conan, it takes 5 years off of his life.
Oh, shit.
So he's trying to...
He should just be a baby at this point. Maybe just one year.
Maybe just one year.
It's been a lot.
Maybe just one year.
It's been a lot of time.
you turned Scott into a baby, didn't you? It happens. But yes, he looks fantastic for his age. I will give him that. To talk about the plotting and the kind of beats of this movie a little bit, one thing that right away, and I think we've mentioned this about a few different superhero movies that don't understand why it works, that this movie starts with the classic in media res. Mm. It starts with the classic, like, we're already in the action. Then let's step back to childhood, then adults, and then how did they get to this crisis? And it is, I think... It's something that's been done in different stories and in movies for a while, but I feel like the first Iron Man movie and its success really popularized people who don't understand why it worked. Because the first Iron Man movie starts with him getting hit with his own bomb and bleeding out, and then we show what it led up to that scenario. And it works in that first Iron Man movie, and the reason they did it is because they're like, in the script, he is a dick for 30 minutes, and everyone's rooting against him before he gets his comeuppance and learns a lesson. So we wanted you to feel something for him beforehand. So it starts in media res, and then it jumps back. And there's a reason for that, and it's because you feel things about this character. Whereas a lot of superhero movies are like, okay, so that's what you do. We start at scene 6, then we go back to scene 1 with no real thought as to why they should start at scene 6, because the first scene of this movie is him just collecting sample bats and not getting his powers, and there's no fight scene. It's not like an in media res James Bond, where it's like it's slow at the first beginning of the movie, so we need to pop it off with a quick action scene. It's just him collecting bats.
I mean, the collection of the bats is the most exciting thing until he gets his powers, though. Like, nothing else more exciting happens than that. So right. I was going to say, I think what you said is true about why Iron Man works. It's about Tony's progression and how we feel about Tony. But I think the lesson everyone took was, oh, you have to open with action. People are going to walk out of the theater if there's no action in the first 10 minutes of a film. And we won't. We paid $12. We will stay for the whole 2 hours.
Yep.
You'll get to the action eventually. We trust that will happen. But I think the lesson everyone took was you need action right off the top. Uncharted absolutely did it. They were like, we're going to start waking up on the plane when he's hanging out of the thing. Like, absolutely ridiculous.
Let's start at scene 20 because we don't trust.
But it doesn't give any emotional resonance. It doesn't give any character building, as you said. It is just, let's start with action for no particular reason.
Well, and I think that those are two different, and sometimes they're the same purpose. Like, in Iron Man, it is a very, like, a tense explosion, action-y scene, even though he's not Iron Man yet. So I think that sometimes movies do it because they're like, we need to get to the crux of this character right away. And sometimes movies do it because it's like, fuck, we're too slow and we're worried audiences will walk out, so we need action right away. And sometimes it's both. And in this one, like, it wasn't anything. It wasn't a character beat. It wasn't an action scene. There is no reason for it to be off the top of this movie. I find it's not even particularly fast-paced or exciting in any way.
No, it's not. They're trying to add a little bit of, like, tension by the fact that, like, the helicopter pilot wants to leave before sunup. And I'm like, oh, does a monster live around here? Or, like, is there some kind of, like, is he going to get bit by, like, a real curse? Like, is that how he gets his powers or something? And it's just, there's a lot of bats.
There's just too many bats to really hang around after dark.
Just too many fucking bats. He doesn't like getting bat gook off of the wings of his helicopter. They run into his windshield, probably, and he doesn't enjoy it. And that's the whole crux of the scene. It's just like, oh, that's too many bats later.
And that's an inconvenient amount of bats.
It's, you know, they might go in the engine and fuck up the helicopter. It's not what you want to happen. But what I love jokingly about this scene is that we've said Jared Leto is so flat. And he has so many chances to be dramatic. Like, he went to Costa Rica personally to capture bats.
Like, he didn't just hire someone to get bats.
I think you can order them online. I don't think you have to fly there personally to observe the collection of bats. They're regular old Costa Rican bats.
Yeah.
And they're not endangered, it didn't seem like. Like, there were so many of them. They can't be.
Oh, yeah. Like, a drop of blood and he collected thousands?
Yeah. And, like, also, you didn't just bring some blood in a vial. You had to cut your hand open right, there. And so, like, his character is written kind of dramatically, like as doing, like, dramatic over-the-top shit.
Yeah.
But he's not leaning into that.
Yeah.
And the characters around him aren't leaning into that. Like, no one is like, you flew to Costa Rica to get bats? You work at a hospital. Like, we had patients to see. You can just get someone else to bring you bats. They're not illegal.
Yeah, you just get, I mean, they might be. They I don't know. I don't know. He's exporting exotic animals. I don't know if that's all above
get
board.
Get a license. It's for research purposes.
And how did he get back? Like, it's so dumb that it's just, like, the helicopter pilot's like, we're leaving you, bye. And it's like, okay, well, he's just on a cliffside as a weakened man who needs hourly blood transfusions.
He needs three
blood
transfusions.
How did he get out of there with the bats?
Three blood transfusions a day, and they left him there. And the helicopter got beat to shit.
Yeah.
Because he got all the bats.
And all the helicopter people were acting like they landed on Jurassic Park, and it's just a cave with some regular bats. And I don't know what any of that was, any of this opening sequence. We get them as kids, and it's like the kid actors. Morbius might have been better than Leto and actually brought more to the character.
I actually had felt a lot of things for Kid Morbius, like, especially when he, like, fixes Milo's blood pump real quick and he's like, I gotta save my friend. It actually felt like the only time he wanted to save a life.
And it's the only time he felt, like, particularly intelligent as well, because the rest of the movie, we're told he's intelligent. Uh-huh. We're told, he got the Nobel Prize. He owns some fake blood companies. He's done it. But that's the only time where he's like, I need to save a life. And he like is Tony Starking it. He's figuring it out in the moment on the fly. He's being clever. We're told he's clever, but we never see him be clever again.
Yeah, the only other time they even set him up as like, I'm a clever doctor, is when the little girl is like getting sicker. And he just rushes in. He's like, put her in a coma. That's it.
That's all he got.
He doesn't fix her. She doesn't wake up. It's, I don't know if she has the same disease and he's supposed to be curing her too later. Like, it feels like there are 18 million things cut from this movie that are introduced and have no payoff. The little girl, the cat introduced with no payoff, origami things introduced with no payoff, Tyrese's metal arm introduced with no payoff. So many things are just like brought up once and don't connect to the rest of the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, even the fact of, like, getting it on an illegal ship in international waters for the opening scene.
That was just, like, slightly to the left of Rhode Island, apparently.
Yeah, it was just a little bit off.
Just, like, the bare line of international waters.
But also, why? Like, he's clearly doing illegal experiments, like, secretively in New York. Mm-hmm. And even Martine is like, I know you're doing these illegal ones. And he's like, well, we all have deniability. Boop-a-doo, I'm in my New York skyscraper office. And then he's like, we need to have a scene on a ship. And for no reason, he could have just murdered other people. I understand the purpose of, like, it's an illegal experiment. But he's already been doing that. And he doesn't think he's going to turn into a murderous vampire. So why he has to be on a ship of... Why it was a ship of mercenaries to begin with, heavily armed, also does not make any sense.
That confused me more than anything. I honestly didn't mind the we have to do it on a ship, because I think there is a difference of I'm cutting open some bats versus human trials.
Okay.
I think human trials might be especially illegal. Like, I think cutting open a bat, you get a fine. I think cutting open a human, very much jail.
Okay.
So I actually don't mind the ship thing once he's going to human trials. But, like, the dude who just comes down to check on them with, like, an AK-47, it's not a drug shipment. Why didn't you hire a real boat?
A normal boat.
Just to be like, we need to go to the middle and don't come downstairs.
Yeah, leave us alone for a bit. And, like, maybe some of the people on the ship would have guns because they're like, we mainly do illegal shit
here. Makes sense, yeah.
But also, they'd be like, our cargo right now is a frail man and then this woman. And there's, like, nine of us, and we all have guns. And then, he hears a noise, and he's like, well, get the gun. I got to go see what that frail doctor is doing.
What that dying man is doing downstairs in his medical lab.
These are two humans that these mercenaries could push over. There's no reason for them to be like, get the guns, let's go. They could win by pushing.
This is why I was so surprised when he, like, maydays. And he's like, we're off the coast of, was it Long Island or Rhode Island? We're off the coast of...
wherever.
America. Like, Northern America. Because I thought the only reason to have mercenaries, but I was like, oh, you're in, like, pirate waters?
Right.
You're, like, in a place where ships get, like, robbed a lot or something. But I think off the coast of Rhode Island, not too much.
Probably not too pirate heavy.
I don't feel like I hear a lot about Rhode Island pirates.
I don't think it's
not
a huge...
not recently.
I don't think it's a huge problem.
Maybe
you know?
Back in 2002 it was.
Yeah.
I don't remember the news stories of the 2002
the
Rhode
heavy
Island
pirates that were going on. Yeah, just no real write-off reason for why they're worried about pirates. There's been a bunch of pirating lately. Pirates on the uprise.
And what was so also weird about it is they set this one guy up to kind of be a jerk. Like, not too much of a jerk, but he comes down. He's like a little bit of a sexist jerk.
Yeah.
But what they could have done is set them up. They were like, we're going to rob you or we're going to hold you hostage to kind of give Morbius an out for killing them.
Yeah.
But instead, they're just like some dude you hired and then killed.
Yeah.
Who didn't do anything bad enough for us to be like, we forgive you, Morbius, for killing the mercenaries.
All they did, and I'm not saying it's good, they did a push. They did a push. They pushed.
Only one of them did a push.
Only one of them did a push. And frankly, I agree with the push. Because Martine was like, no, he's fine. He is visibly not fine.
He killed the first dude already.
He's already murdered a man, and he's punching his way through thick medical glass. So he's murdered a man, and he's punching through glass. And she's like, no, he's fine. Put the guns down. And one of the mercenaries pushes her to be like, no, move.
And gonna then shoot him.
And then in the push, she slips, falls, hits her head, and is rendered immediately unconscious. And that is what these guys are all murdered for.
Yeah, these
when
guys,
in reality, she's unconscious because they were trying to protect her. And then he murders them because he's trying to protect her is what we as an audience are supposed to buy into.
Yeah. And basically, he just killed his employees. He hired these guys.
Yes, he did.
He vetted them. He talked to them. He paid them. And then he just murdered them.
Yeah.
And I definitely love when the FBI shows up and they're like, look, we don't care about 8 mercenaries. I'm like, why? They were human men.
Yep.
Just because the movie's supposed to be on Morbius's side?
I don't even know what to say. Because, so the cops, played by Tyrese and Al Madrigal.
Al Madrigal was pretty good.
He's very good.
I think
he's a phenomenally talented stand-up comedian. He doesn't get enough in this. There's so much about this that it's like, this is a year 2000 action movie. The like getting
Tyrese is here.
Getting a bunch of bland action stars to play it straight and one stand-up comedian that you fucking hope improvs some lines. Like, it is very like Blade Trinity to be like, we've got a problematic star, a script that doesn't work, and one dude who took an improv class who we are really counting on pulling this whole thing together. It is so the year 2000. So Al Madrigal's great, and Tyrese is the other cop. But these initial murders, they happen in a ship with mercenaries in international waters. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the way that the law would work when the bodies come ashore in America, but they were murdered in international waters. Who's allowed to investigate? Who's not? So it could be a scenario where the cops show up and they're like, we want to know why a boat full of bodies was brought onto American soil, but we're legally not allowed to investigate, so we can't push this Dr. Morbius too hard. We can't ask too many questions. It's not our jurisdiction. But it really is just, like, not a conflict of any kind. There's no conflict at all about we're investigating murders that happen in international waters.
Yeah, because you hear so much about how you can do crimes in international waters, but they don't tell you that, like, the crime counts if you drift to shore later. And you have to come to shore later. There's no just staying in international waters. Eventually you come to shore.
Yeah, and if the crime continues to persist,
being death.
Yes. So, like, when it's like, we can gamble in international waters, it's like, okay, money has exchanged hands, now you come back, but the crime doesn't persist. But a murder continues having been murdered. So I don't know how the law works on it, though.
I actually really wish they had introduced that, because it would explain why they're such shitty cops. They are the worst cops of all time. So their interviews are ridiculous. They go to see Martine, who is the only survivor of a massacre. She's got a slight head injury, but she's talking fine. They go in to see her and like, do you want to tell us what happened? And she's like, no. And they're like, all right, good day, ma'am. Goodbye.
Fuck, she got us.
She doesn't ask for a lawyer. She doesn't say that, like, oh, no, I was unconscious the whole time and I have no idea. She's just like, no, I'd rather not. And they leave immediately. No further questions about the 8 dead bodies on that ship. And then they're interviewing Morbius. And they're like, why'd you kill those 8 people? And, like, are you a vampire? And he's like, kinda. And they're like, okay, bye. Like, the shortest interview you've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And, like, not like the thing they do in most movies where they, like, get called out of the room. Like, another cop knocks on the door.
Right, and then it leaves the hero a chance to escape or do something.
Or at least have a reason to end an interrogation, because interrogations last for hours. There has to be a reason for the cops to stop.
Not just like, I don't want to talk about it. You know what? Not feeling it.
Cops love to just walk away and leave you alone. Notoriously a thing they
enjoy.
When
you're the sole survivor of a serial killing, you are questioned for being a serial killer.
That's kind
of... So that's going to happen for Martine.
Mm-hmm. Although there is a sexism to not being interviewed as the serial killer. I will say, this movie's early 2000s sexism is, A lady couldn't have killed eight men.
Lady didn't do a murder.
But she might have seen who did it.
If she gets a push, she'll be unconscious for hours.
She was on a respirator. And I know in real life that can happen, but this is a movie about vampire men.
And and also that is very much a just a dated action movie thing where it's like a man can be exploded in a jet plane and it will be fine. But if a woman gets a good push, she is unconscious and is just bait for an entire action scene.
There's artificial blood and Tyrese has a metal arm.
Yeah.
But she got a push and a respirator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's done now. Mm-hmm. The Tyrese metal arm thing is
What is cut from this movie about the metal arm?
I don't know. I don't know what is going on. One thing that actually really did stand out to me, the scene when they're in the lobby questioning Morbius, mm-hmm. right before Morbius goes on the run. And Morbius has invented fake blood is the big plot point of this. And he turns down the Nobel Prize for it, saying, like, you shouldn't get a prize for making something accidentally. It's like, no, people actually, that happens all the fucking time. That's very common. But anyway, he...
Oh, I just think you shouldn't go to the ceremony if you're not going to accept the award. He's such a dick.
That was
He's
also
such
a
an
dick.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Someone else would have taken it.
You flew to Sweden. Like they got you a
You got a tux.
They got you a special plane that allowed you to do blood transfusions mid-flight. Like you were accommodated very much for a thing you just weren't feeling.
But Morbius just loves to travel.
In this, he does love it.
I want to go to Costa Rica. I want to go to Sweden.
He loves it. Dies for it. So he's in the lobby. Tyrese is questioning him, and it's right before Morbius goes on the run. And Tyrese has this line, and I can see his lips. He says ass, and they've removed it from the movie. He says, his lips anyway, say, your fake blood really saved my ass in Iraq.
Okay.
And the line that's 80 yard over but doesn't sync up is, your fake blood really saved my arm in Iraq. So I don't know if that is they wanted to censor the word ass to get this a PG rating or whatever, or if it was, oh shit, we deleted the whole arm plot line, make that arm, and then it's just a thing. Even though why would fake blood give him a robot arm? It makes no fucking sense in any way.
Those aren't connected. I guess the fake blood left him alive long enough to put the robot arm on.
Maybe.
Without the fake blood, you never would have survived long enough for the Bucky arm. It just wouldn't have gotten on there.
Well, then that fake arm saved your life and not your arm.
Mm-hmm.
It saved your life and then other robotics doctors gave you a robot arm.
Because there's no point where he's like, I can punch vampires with this arm.
He never uses the arm.
It never comes up. He's just a man who has a metal arm. And I looked up the comic book character. He doesn't have a metal arm. This is not a Misty Knight scenario where they're like, well, this character has a metal arm, so he's got a metal arm. He's a dude with two human arms in the comics.
This is infuriating.
It is absolutely infuriating. What you said earlier, though, I think is true.
Honestly, it feels like a movie where Tyrese as an actor got a metal arm midway through filming, and they were like, write that in. Write that in now. Write that in.
They wouldn't let me do this in Fast and Furious, so I brought this metal arm that I wanted to wear.
He brought it from home.
I brought this from home. So it doesn't look like super great, but it doesn't look bad.
It's not the worst. I did pay some good money for people to make it, but it is mine, and I am taking it home.
I'm
going
to take it home at the end of the day. This isn't the prop department doesn't get to do
this. Tell the prop department to put some kind of a tag or sticker on it that says that it is my property.
Property of Tyrese.
Property
you know
of
what?
Tyrese.
I'm going to put it in my trailer.
Okay, I'll hold on to it, but we are going to use it in the movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take off my blazer. He didn't tell anyone. It was just under a blazer. And then in one shot,
it's
he just
took
a blazer.
Only one scene that you even see it.
And he had a metal arm.
It's such a bananas choice. There's so much happening in this movie that does not need to be there.
It is. Well, you touched on something else that I did want to discuss, which is this movie is fighting its way to a PG. It has clearly cut out so much to keep the PG rating because, like, there's no reason for it not to be PG-13. It's a movie about vampires who rip your throat out, but, like, there's so little violence. Like, so many times a claw will go against someone's throat and there's no blood spray and there's no showing of, like, you don't even see Martine's injuries when she dies. There's, like, a glisten of like something liquid on her that you assume is blood, but you never see a single injury.
The most PG thing that drove me nuts, because it also felt like just a bad prop thing, was he never drank the blood that he was drinking. So he would have the bags of blood, the IV bag of real or fake blood. And he would take this IV bag and he would drink it kind of like a Capri Sun. But he's chugging a Capri Sun. Turn it upside down. And he would put both hands, like fist over fist, over the mouth, I guess, of the IV bag. Turn it upside down and Jared Leto would start chugging. And you can visibly see it. They're clear IV bags. No liquid leaves the bag. And then he would drop the prop bag and go like, and wipe his mouth. But there's no blood on his mouth. And the bag's still visibly full. And I don't know what the fuck that was about. Like, couldn't get Jared Leto to actually, like, drink the Kool-Aid or prop liquid, or they couldn't get the bag to work.
I thought they
were like, we'll fix it in post, and never did for a rating reason.
Oh, I was going to say, I think they either were going to put blood in CG-wise, or they removed blood CG-wise for the PG. Of, like, we can't just show him with blood dripping down his face. I think another reason might be he mostly drinks blue blood, because that's the artificial blood, and that would just look kind of silly.
And yeah, because even when he drinks the bags of blue blood, it doesn't leave the bag.
No, you never see any of it like overflow. He's very civilized.
Yeah.
It never overflows from his mouth like any other vampire would drink blood. Also, he drinks it way too fast. And that was infuriating to me. Like, especially in the prison cell, when Matt Smith brings him one of them, he picks it up and it's got a little straw in it. So it's only so fast that blood can come out through that little straw. Like, you've all drank a Capri Sun through a straw.
Yeah.
So he flips it over.
It's not a chuggable beverage holder.
Yeah, he doesn't rip the entire top off or anything. He goes through the straw for just like, and then he's like, oh, I'm a full-blown vampire again. I'm like, you had like a tongue worth of blood go into your body just now. You did not drink anywhere near that entire bag.
Yeah. I don't know what the prop department / post-production visual effects was doing with the bags. Because it doesn't make sense to me. Just show him. It's blue. It's not even red like blood. Why can we not show him drink blue? It is a random blue liquid that doesn't exist in the real world. How was that censored out?
It would look like he had a slushy.
It really would.
It would have been like, okay, PG, slushy.
It's visibly Kool-Aid, so I don't understand what's going on. I will say one other slight positive for this movie for me is that other than the stuff they've visibly edited around for rating purposes, I think the visual effects aren't bad. I kind of like how they do the sunken faces and the transition to the vampire form. I think they're not willing to commit to it as often as I would like with Morbius, whereas with Matt Smith's character, he does it way more often. And I think maybe just because Matt Smith's less pretentious of an actor and is like, yeah, make me look ugly and weird. Who gives a shit? I'm a fucking vampire. Let's do it. But I like the transition into the sunken face. I like the visuals of how they look. I like this kind of like particle trail that they leave as they run and kind of Nightcrawler teleport. Like, it is a sample platter of a bunch of visual effects that have been in other superhero movies over the past two decades, but I think it kind of works.
I also didn't mind them. I have a few like picky things about them. I think you're right that they totally did not commit to when the faces change or how much they change or what causes a change in the face. But the actual change like looked pretty good. Like the face really sunk in. You got a really good vampire look. Matt Smith definitely was like more like absolutely vampire me up. And Jared Leto was like, but I'm so pretty. I'm 50 and I look so great for my age. You can't vampire me up. People will check how old I am. He does look like pretty good in this movie, but yeah, he's not vampire-y enough often enough, but I'm iffy on like the trails. The fights look terrible. You couldn't see what was happening.
Oh yeah, the fights were just a pile of CGI nothing.
But I liked the echolocation a lot. I liked when things kind of exploded with particles during echolocation. I think that was probably my favorite effect.
Yeah.
He's like trying to scour the whole city for Martine and like just like everything popping off everything. Like he's like, it's like when you dust something and dust pops up. He's like, I checked there. Dust popped up.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like that. One thing that is so small that bothered me, though, is when they're fighting and he's in his orange jumpsuit from prison, I don't know why. I was really bothered that all the particles were orange. Because I'm like, your suit hasn't had, like, your outfit doesn't have any degradation to it. So what are the particles? Like, I don't know what this means. If it's just like,
right.
Is it smoke? Because I thought it was smoke at first. I thought your bodies were making smoke.
Mm, and really, it's more of a, like, just a general trail, we'll say.
Yeah,
like an
like
air quote trail.
Blur, I guess. Mm. But you're not going at, like, flash level speed.
Yeah.
But maybe you were. So, yeah, it was a little thing that bothered me, like the bright orange when he was, like, in the orange suit. But overall, I think it looked cool.
I also noticed the change with the orange suit. And, you know, it does bring in a lot of questions, like even with the echolocation, like all the particles that come off stuff retain its color. Mm. And so, like, there's stuff like that. But, like, it is visually a little bit easier for us to distinguish as an audience.
Who's fighting and who's winning.
Because once he was in the orange jumpsuit, I'm like, this is the... It was, I would say, the best fight of the movie because it was visually distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the end fight between him and Matt Smith, I'm like, great, we've got two black trench coat blurs fighting black trench coat blurs.
Mm.
And the lining of his of Morbius's jacket is purple. So once in a while, there's just a like, oh, just a whisper of purple. Oh, what's that? Oh, it's purple. And that's it. That's all you get.
Accent color of purple.
So I liked the orange jumpsuit for having a different color, but I agree it makes no sense why the trail would change. I think it is a visual effect that I like, and I really kind of wish it was the visual effect on Carnage in Venom 2.
Ooh.
Because that's the kind of like chaotic, I am moving faster than my symbiote and my symbiote catches up to me. It is a great visual effect that I think Sony kind of misuses on this property and would have served Carnage way better as a property. But I think it is good work by the special effects and visual effects people and CGI and computer people who worked on this movie.
Mm, yeah, I think it's mostly good. I will say, as much as like the faces looked pretty good, I think there were multiple scenes where they did not tell the actors or had not decided the faces were going to change. Because there were so many scenes where just like no one responded to the fact that you just vampired out. Like the interrogation scene.
Yeah.
He's two people who have never seen a vampire before, do not know for a fact that you have genetically changed your body, and you basically fully vamped out.
Yeah.
Like he's in the, and he goes, I'm hungry. You wouldn't like me when I'm hungry. And then his face completely changes. They're both sitting there like, well, I guess he's not going to tell us anything. And neither of them are like,
this interrogation's going nowhere.
And neither of them are like, holy shit, did your face just change? Which is wild because that is so Tyrese's character from Fast and Furious. Like, that is why I would hire Tyrese to be in this movie. To be like, holy shit, there's vampires. Like, that's why he should be here.
But Tyrese is playing this so straight.
So straight. So boring. You're a man with a metal arm and no personality. What are you doing? You're in a campy, fun movie, or what should be.
What?
Like, if Tyrese was at Matt Smith's level, this movie would be really fun.
I think that that would definitely help. I think that as much as Al Madrigal is a very talented comedian, a wonderful stand-up, and I think a highlight of this movie, he is a slow-paced, kind of like smart, sharp quip kind of comedian. Like, some comedians are machine guns, some comedians are sniper rifles. Al Madrigal's a sniper rifle.
Tyrese is a machine gun.
And Tyrese should be a machine. You pair those two together. But Tyrese came in like super straight and plain. And if you're going to do that, even though Al Madrigal is the highlight of this movie, I think you need to get a much more obnoxious, fast-paced comedian partner to amp up the energy considerably. Like, his partner needs to be fucking Jack Black or so. Like, it needs to be really uncomfortably energetic to match what Tyrese is doing here.
Yeah, it almost feels like, because that is a good pairing if Tyrese was doing what he normally does. So it almost feels like Tyrese was hired, no audition, to be like, well, just do what you do in Fast and Furious. And he was like, oh, no, I don't want to be typecast. And they're like, oh, no.
Oh, no, we fucked up.
The sidekick we've hired for you does not work with this very straight character you're playing.
And I brought a metal arm from home.
Fuck, you're so weird. You're so weird, Tyrese. Why are you playing a subdued character with a metal arm?
Write that into the script.
No.
Write it in.
We will not.
Well, I'm wearing the metal arm, so you figure it out.
God damn it, Tyrese.
He's a son of a bitch who's wearing a metal arm.
Oh, shit.
And you can't stop him. One of the last things I want to talk about, I only got a couple other things that I want to chat about. I don't understand if the movie is saying, implying or not, that these two vampires have different powers. I don't know what's going on because Matt Smith seems to not be able to fly, but there's no real reason for that. Like, Leto gets away by flying, and Matt Smith's just kind of like, wow, dude flies.
Oh, shit.
But I don't know why, and also Morbius can control bats and Matt Smith can't. I don't know what that's supposed to be either.
I honestly am not bothered by this at all. I really think this all boils down to a thing I actually think could have been very interesting in that Morbius trained himself. He went through like a few days of like, I'm in the lab alone. I'm timing how long I need blood. I'm going into the bat chamber to learn to control bats. I'm testing out echolocation. So I think the fact that he just
Which I did like that sequence. I love a training montage.
Love a training montage.
And I also love practical decisions by a hero where it's like, okay, let's take this step by step and figure it out scientifically and sequentially.
Yeah, like on paper, that scene actually, those scenes are actually like, and actually even in execution, those scenes are actually pretty good. Like, I like this idea that I'm a scientist, so I came at this scientifically, and that made me better at using these powers, whereas Matt Smith is just like, I'm just going to go buck wild. And it might make me physically stronger, but it means I haven't explored everything I can do. Right. I didn't sit in a room quietly and, like, flex my ears for 2 hours trying to figure out echolocation. He's too impatient. So it didn't bother me that they had different powers.
Okay.
And they said that the red blood was, you know, making you more feral, making you stronger, making you more of a hunter. So, yeah, it didn't. This actually I had no problems with. This, was to me, was, like, training versus brute strength.
Okay, I like your perspective on this. Mm-hmm. I like this. This is a fun perspective, and I'm like, I can kind of get on board with this. It makes me, in retrospect, enjoy that or tolerate that a little bit more.
Yay!
The other thing that I think is a little bit nuts about like the background and the powers is the three vials.
Why were there three?
Why were there three?
I think the little girl was supposed to get one.
Okay.
At the very end. Or Martine was supposed to get one earlier. I don't know. But the only other person we met with this disease was the little girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think maybe there was supposed to be a line like, I brought one for her in case I figure this out.
Right.
But yeah, there were three vials.
There were three vials. It really made me think that we were going to get a third vampire by the end of the movie. And we do with Martine, but vampirism can be transferred by bite, apparently, by the end of this movie. Mm-hmm. So we've evolved and we don't need the third vial. But it's such a Chekhov's gun that, like, it's like, I used one. There are two left. I've put them in my pocket and jumped ship. I've returned to my lab. I'm going to take them out of my pocket. Look at this. One, two. I have two more vials. Never needs that second.
And not even a shot of, like, the little holder with only one left.
Mm.
To, like, because having, like, one be there and one be gone is, like, visually, like, one's gone, I guess. It's a little easier to know one's gone when there used to be two. You're like, right. Oh, that is the exact vial holder we were looking at earlier. It had two in it before.
Mm.
But they never show that.
No.
There's no reason for it. There's so many things, like, the cat, as I said, I felt like he was going to eat the cat at some point. That cat had no purpose. The metal arm, yeah, the three vials. There's so much stuff that never gets called back in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm running out of ability to process this.
See, my big question is, I want to know how Michael Morbius knows who the fuck Venom is.
I mean, there's been newspaper articles about Venom.
Has there been newspaper articles? They know his name is Venom?
That's a good question. But
they know there's a big black monster,
in the
maybe.
Venom films, there are newspaper articles about Venom.
I think that's true.
Venom does exist.
I don't think he ever put his name out there of I'm Venom, from my recollection of the movie Venom or Venom 2.
You could be right. You could be right, but there is at least news stories about the crazy guy or whatever.
I mean, on the news stories.
Yeah.
Maybe Michael Morbius was like at that rave Venom went to in Venom 2.
Well, if we're talking about that, I want to bring up the fact that Venom is not in this movie for some fuck reason.
Where is Venom? Your only other character in this universe, beloved, available,
yeah.
Been around.
Surprisingly successful.
Absolutely shockingly successful and beloved.
Against your own best efforts and intentions. Sony has, I still maintain, Sony has no idea why people like Venom. Like, gun to their head, you went to every executive who is working on the Venom movies and the Sony Spider-Man universe, and you're like, you know Venom's a queer icon, right? And that's why people love him. They'd be like, what are you talking about? They like that that big man get Uzi. Like, that's all, like, they have no idea what is appealing or what is successful about it. So they got ass backwards lucky, and they don't have him in a post-credit in anywhere here.
No, it almost, like, it's so weird that it's weird to be able to get Michael Keaton and not Venom.
Yes. And I get because showcasing Keaton, because that is a get.
That is a get, but if there was no one else, like if it's just Morbius, no other connections, whatever, be like, okay, cool. You didn't get Venom, but you didn't get anyone else. But to be like, we got Michael Keaton, but then it's two Michael Keaton scenes instead of a Michael Keaton and a Venom scene.
Yeah.
You made two scenes that did the same thing.
Yep.
Instead of two scenes with two different villains to make half of a Sinister Six. Now you've only got one third. Yeah. My math is bad.
You've got a sinister third.
You've got a sinister third.
Third of the six, yeah.
Of the six. Venom ain't around.
I just can't understand why they couldn't get Tom Hardy for something.
Because Tom Hardy loves playing Venom.
Clearly.
He loves this character.
Loves chewing the scenery with this character.
Yeah, like you said, they don't understand why we love this character. Tom Hardy gets it. He's like, Venom's a loser. People love that about him. They yeah. love that his life is not together. They like that I've never looked sexy as this character, whereas fucking Jared Leto's like, make sure I get a tan. I have a really high collar on my nice jacket, and my long hair is very, like, Aragorn-y, and I have abs. And, like, I don't think Tom Hardy even got in shape to play Venom.
No, Tom Hardy is naturally in shape.
Oh, he's naturally, like in good shape, yeah. But he doesn't have, like, a shirtless hot scene.
Yes, yeah. Tom Hardy is just organically a man who could wreck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could fucking
destroy. Yeah. Tom Hardy is, like, sincerely almost too much into, like, MMA and shit. Like, he has the body of a late career UFC fighter. He's not someone you should fuck with in any regard. But, yeah, not the hot shirtless scene. He's just like, this man's a nasty boy mess.
He's a nasty boy mess
who's in love with the voice inside of his head, and everyone's like, yes, that's our dude.
And Morbius could have been a nasty boy mess.
He really could have been
but
a nasty
Leto
boy.
Would not go there.
No.
Like Matt Smith was like, my character's a nasty boy mess. We're like, we love that. Matt Smith, we love that he's a mess.
Love that you're
he's
here,
Matt
Smith.
He's never gotten to live his life. Now he's living his life full speed. I get it. It makes sense.
And I'm happy to have more Keaton around. For sure. I would have liked to have seen him in more Spider-Man. Whatever. I almost think that it's more embarrassing that this movie, it really highlights how low stakes they've gone, that they're like, the multiverse opened. The thing where Marvel had so much goddamn shit. Time, space, dimensions. And we got Michael Keaton's Vulture. Phenomenal performance, great character, great movie, but like, that was 100% of what you were able to grab from what Marvel had filmed. 100% of your everything was Vulture.
The only villain you got was the only villain who's just a regular dude.
And here's the other fucking thing that makes no goddamn sense. He teleports over into a prison cell.
Yep.
His only power is that he is a regular dude who had been embezzling Shintari tech
from the
Battle of New York and creating shit from alien technology.
Yep.
Then he is teleported in a jumpsuit, and then he just has the tech from aliens that is not on this Earth or of this Earth in multiple not of this Earths. It makes no sense why he's in full costume in here.
The amount of money it would have taken to, like, and, like, time to get the things together to make a Vulture suit for a man who has no identity in this world, no bank account, no form of identification, no history, just a dude who woke up in a prison cell and is like, well, now I'm going to make $1 million Iron Man-esque Vulture suit. No, you're not. You're going to be in a halfway house for, like, 3 years trying to get ID.
You're fucked, dude. Yeah, you don't have a social security number, my man.
You gotta have a social security number, even in 2002.
Yes.
Even back then.
Even as a 2002 prisoner, you got to have a social security number, my man.
He is so calm about the fact that he just teleported. No one has a big reaction to anything in this film.
His literal one main character trait of that first Spider-Man movie was, I love my daughter. Mm-hmm. Not, where's my daughter? How do I get back? He's just like, let's have a fun crew. Let's get a romp. I no longer care about my wife and child.
No, you'd think he would want to get back.
Yes, yes. And he, you know, it's... Even the dialogue they give him, I forget the exact line, but it is rambling nothing because he meets Morbius and he's literally like, I don't know, it's probably something about Spider-Man. Anyway, you want to start a crew and do some good? It logically makes no sense, and it is just a series of rambling idiot sentences of like something, something Spider-Man, and Morbius just gives a blank stare because he has no idea who that man is. Then it's just like, you don't know him? Okay. Do you want to start a crew? Man, I've never met before. Also, should we do some good? It's like, so we're doing a friendly six? Are we?
Did he say do some good?
He said let's do some good in this world.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, okay. Are you going to try to do a Suicide Squad slash like...
Well, yeah, because all their villains are like anti-villains, you know, or anti-heroes.
Yeah. Was it Thunderbolts? Is it?
Thunderbolts are like the kind of like the villains looking for redemption, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, are you doing a Thunderbolts? Are you doing a Suicide Squad? Why do you want to do good? Why is that your thing now? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
It felt like they got him there, they got Michael Keaton there, and then he was like, what are the lines? And they're like, say something about Spider-Man. And like, you didn't write anything down? And like, no, just like, make sure you mention Spider-Man, though. He was like, okay, I guess.
All right, I got to be wrapped by 5 because I got to go be Batman in another movie. That's a way bigger deal.
I got a big year this year. I got time for one take. Well, we didn't write anything.
Well, I'm breezing through and I'm going to mumble something about Spider-Man.
And Morbius, it doesn't come here because it's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
And
I got to go be Batman.
Spider-Man.
What a movie.
What a film.
Yeah.
That you can see if you want to.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's a go to the bathroom film.
Yeah, who cares? I wouldn't even put it at a laundry movie. I'd put it like just say like it's really nothing.
No, it's not really, anything.
Yeah, there's nothing.
If you already are a Matt Smith fan, maybe watch it for him.
Yeah.
But like if you're not, then it's like he's very good. He's not in enough to be like go see it for Matt Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, see it for Matt Smith if you already care about Matt Smith. I think it's a great breakdown.
Hmm.
Way to go.
We did it.
Well, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this movie if you could change anything? But before we do ask that final question, we have to thank our other sponsor of today's episode, our wonderful friends over at Raycon.
Over at Raycon, making my ears feel good with their great sounds.
Absolutely. They make phenomenal headphones. I'm loving their wireless earbuds. It's the best way to bring audio with you because no matter how much you shake things up, literally there's no amount that's going to make it fall out of your ears. I'm jumping around. I'm doing a jumping jack. I've been exercising with them in, and those bad boys are staying in there, even through a burpee, which is just the most... You're getting,
God-awful.
You're up and down, left and right. All the directions of movements are happening during a burpee, and Raycons are staying in there.
Every axis. I spitefully tried to make them fall out, and I couldn't, because I get like aggressive when a thing says it won't do a thing. I'm like, they won't fall out. I'm like, oh yeah. And
you're yelling at your earbuds mm-hmm. while you're
and
trying.
And I'm like,
to...
oh damn, these were worth my money. Oh,
come on. Why are we like this? But that's what we're like. We try to spite them and. We can't. They have fantastic earbuds. They also have awareness mode for when you need to listen to your surroundings. So I really like that because I cycle a lot. Sometimes I like listening to the thing, but I don't want to be completely blackout to the world and what's going on. They got great gel tips for a perfect in-ear fit. They're very comfortable. I'm very happy with them.
I'm absolutely happy with them. I love how long they last. The Raycons offer 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. I charged the case before we went down south, and I didn't have to charge anything again my entire time I was down there. I'm listening by the pool. I'm listening on the plane and my Raycons. One charge from the case was good for an entire week down south. It was incredible.
Really breezy and easy and simple. It's no wonder Raycons Everyday Earbuds have over 48,000 five-star reviews.
Their everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever, and I absolutely love my Raycons.
So right now, our listeners can get 15% off your Raycon order at buyraycon.com/TFS. That's buyraycon, RAYCON.com/TFS to save 15% on Raycons. buyraycon.com/TFS. And thank you, Raycon, for your support.
Thank you so much, Raycon.
And before we ask the final question, we will remind you, as we do every week, please take a minute or two out of your day, support the podcast for free by simply subscribing, rating, and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you get your podcast. It's a simple thing. It's a free thing. It helps us move up the charts. It helps us get new listeners. New listeners check those reviews. I know it might seem trivial, but it really does make a big difference to podcasters like us.
It makes a huge difference that people know other people like this podcast. And really, also, people can see the dates when reviews are left. So getting new ones in there all the time makes us seem like relevant and hip and happening. Let people know that we're relevant and hip and happening.
We're relevant and hip and happening, okay?
Thank you, Andrew. If only the reviews would start mentioning how hip and relevant and happening we are.
I really hope by the end of the week I read a review that says we're relevant, hip, and happening. That would really make my day. So do that. It's a free way to support the podcast. If you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can check out our Patreon. Patreon's a monthly subscription service where you can subscribe at whatever level is in your budget, and you're going to get different levels of cool bonuses for however much you're able to kick in. You can do as little as $1 a month, as much as you can afford. You can cancel or change on any given month, and if you sign up, you get immediate access to any back catalog of benefits that were at that level. So if you sign up at the $10 hero level, you get an exclusive bonus episode of this podcast every single month. Last month, we did Twilight, and it's been a ride.
It's been a bit of a hit. We have had some requests. So if you're going to check out any of our Patreon episodes, check out our Twilight episode. Highly recommended. And only if it's in the budget. If it's not, do not worry about it. But go leave us that review about how we're relevant, hip, and happening.
At the very minimum, do that. But if you have it in the budget, check us out at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And now, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
This is going to sound like a joke, and maybe it is, but I honestly believe this in my heart. I would cast Matt Smith as Morbius.
I had the exact same change.
Oh, no! We're fucked.
No, it's fine. I'm just going to piggyback. I'm just going to get it out right now. What she said.
Matt Smith is Morbius. Like, oh my God, this Matt Smith and like meeting Venom and him being campy and over the top, and this movie would just be so much bigger and funnier and more like aggressively watchable. And then like, yeah, like, you know, kill Jared Leto. Jared Leto can be the bad guy. I don't even care. Just swap roles. I would watch, and Matt Smith has heart. Like, we've seen him in so many things. He's always so good. He should be the lead of this film. He even got abs, unless those were CG'd in that one scene.
He looks great.
He looks great. Yes, Matt Smith as Morbius. But I have another change if you want to keep on with this one.
I just want to piggyback on and just say, like, I agree with this. I think the exact thing that I had down, and yes, we don't need to cast Jared Leto in anything, but exactly what I had down was flip Jared Leto and Matt Smith, is that Matt Smith is playing vampirism as a, like, a fun, wild transition and, like, fuck it, strap in, let's do it. Let's go for it. I am the knight, baby. He is going out for it. And Jared Leto is inherently a self-serious buzzkill, which is what the villain is written as. Jared Leto is playing the hero as the villain is written, and Matt Smith is playing the villain as the hero is written. So they should flip roles, because Jared Leto is not good for a lot of things, but the overly self-serious buzzkill that we're rooting against is actually pretty good casting for Jared Leto.
Would actually super support this. Yes, let's just, you know, at the end when Matt Smith would have killed him, we would have been like, yay, things are good forever.
Uh-huh.
Can't wait for this.
Yeah, so I'm with you. Flip it.
Absolutely. My only other idea, if the executives of the world will not flip it, would be to add a little bit more fun and charm. I think Morbius needed, and of course this is a very Diana change, I think Morbius needed a fun sidekick. Like, because he's so Vulcan-esque, he just has, like, no emotions, he's so calm, and that's actually kind of interesting for a superhero, I don't mind that, but every scene is so flat that Matt Smith's not in, that if he, like, if Martine was even kind of fun, if more like an Awkwafina and Shang-Chi kind of vibe, like if Martine was, like, a fun helper or nurse, just to be like, whoa, you just jumped off the ceiling, or, like, what else can you do? Like, the scene in Shazam where they're trying to figure out his powers.
Right.
Like, make it fun.
A childlike wonder. And yeah. I get that vampirism is inherently just kind of, like, maybe dour, but you can still find a fun in that dour aspect of it.
I mean, the whole point of Morbius is that he's not really dour. Like, he's the living vampire. He can live off fake blood. He's not dead. He's not, you know, his soul hasn't been removed from his body like vampires do to you. Like, he's just a dude who needs to drink blood. It's not that deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're
right.
You have to live off smoothies. Oh no. Like, that's not, and you get superpowers. It's not that dour. You don't even have little mouth hands like in the cartoon.
No. Bring back the mouth hands, you cowards. But also, let's never see this character again.
Also that. Yes. I hopefully no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully no. And then I would say the other change is put Venom in here. One of the other reasons why I very much would like to see Matt Smith and Jared Leto swap places in this is because I would buy 5 tickets to see Matt Smith chewing scenery with Tom Hardy. Just both of them doing all of the things that no one has told them to do, that, like, the directors don't understand, the executives don't understand, the writers of the movie didn't get these characters, and it is just 2 actors doing so much that no one asked for.
Every executive would just be yelling, like, this could never make money, and then it, like, breaks Endgame records. It's just the biggest box office hit of all time. They're like, we don't get it! They don't, but that's what we want. Yeah,
there would just be a bunch of Tumblr posts about, like, we want to see Morbius and Venom smooch.
Oh, I do want to see.
There'd be, like,
I want to see Matt Smith.
Yeah,
Matt Smith, Morbius,
yeah, that's,
and Venom,
that's what
smooch.
I mean. Like, it would be a very horny sub fandom,
yeah.
I would,
oh,
say,
yes,
as well.
Yes, 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 yes.
In that scenario,
no
there
one's
could be
horny
a lot
for this
on.
Morbius.
No,
though. Fuck
no,
this Morbius.
No, God, no. That's not happening anywhere. Well, I think that's going to be it for Morbius for this week. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be back and we're talking about Sonic 2.
Oh my God, Sonic's back.
We got to go fast again.
We're going to go so fast.
It's going to be a delight. So we're talking about Sonic 2 next week. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamey, Ivimey.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.